Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 67. And a very happy new year in 2018 to you, Dave, and to all our listeners. And the Steelers closed the season with a happy victory over the winless Cleveland Browns, 28-24 yesterday at Heinz Field. No kind of real impact in anything for the Steelers that happened yesterday. But, of course, the NFL playoff field finally set. And here we are, Dave, kind of 5 months after we sat down and the whole thing started. And it's right where we predicted it would be. It's right where most people thought it would be. And it's pointing towards Steeler Patriots. But, obviously, a couple games before that, and each of the teams has to win another game before they meet again in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy New Year. Happy Black Monday. And before we get started here, David, I think you and I probably need to talk about access to this podcast now. So a listener passed along word to us. A lot of people are probably familiar with Stitcher and that app and all like that. David, when it comes to sports podcast, we are currently in the top 100. We are 59th overall. I did not know I was this close to being this almost famous. So, obviously this is my doing, that we're this high, on the list here. So obviously I'm going to have to ask for when my contract's renewed, I'm going to have to ask for a larger portion, of this free site that we have. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was kind of fun to see that you sent that out yesterday, and it's nice to know that we do hear from our listeners all the time, so it's nice to know we're out there hunting with the big dogs, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely, I'm obviously having a little bit of fun with that, but we continue to get donations in before the new year here as well too. David Safara, I think, sent us something. Junior Anderson again, William Otterman, Greg Galbraith, Marshall Lassick, looks like Michael DeSantis. Sent us something. Lawrence Day sent us something. Del Norris. Joey Sneakers. Oh, we got some sneakers donating to us. Nicholas Shinada sent us something there. Charles Shulak. I could keep going here. And if I missed your name, it's just because Jason Kelly, thank you. Robert Canterman, thank you. You know Robert Canterman, don't you?
I do. High school classmate.
Michael Bamer sent us something. Artie Avalanta sent us something. Laughlin sent us something. Vincent Achilles, I think we already hit Vincent as well too there. So thank you for your donations. We try to have some fun with this all the time. But we do it because people listen and because we think people like to listen to it, and we certainly do appreciate the support that we get.
All right, Dave. Let's get let's spend at least a little bit of time talking about this game yesterday, and maybe something that I think has been lost a little bit and in the whole conversation. Let me just ask it simply right out of the chute. How do you look? Landry Jones's numbers are awfully good on paper yesterday after a little bit of a rough start, an early interception, incompletion. Landry Jones put up some good numbers. The Steelers got a win. How did Landry Jones play in your mind?
I thought he played well, David, to be quite honest with you. And I put that up on Twitter last night as well, too. And it's amazing how much hate Landry Jones still gets after all these years. Look, I was one of
those. I agree, by the way. I agree. It's and we'll get back to this. Sorry to just – I threw up, who would you rather have for the next couple of years, Landry Jones and Jashone Kizer? And honestly, the answers might have been 50-50, but they were so polarizing on either side that I was just shocked at how negative people were on Landry Jones. It's like he has the four interception preseason game as every time he comes out. That's like the view I think people have of him.
Yeah, and look, I mean, after, what was it, Landry's second preseason set of games and all, and we were talking back then about setting a 53-man roster, I was like, you know, even though we knew the Steelers were still going to carry three quarterbacks because they always do, you know, you were thinking to yourself, man, just just go ahead and cut bait here. Do we really need Landry Jones as a number three? He's a guy that's going to clear waivers anyway, and you could probably get him to your practice squad. I was one of the Landry Jones detractors, and in no way am I advocating that Landry Jones is the Steelers, you know,
future.
Yeah, future, and you know, they're not going to win Super Bowls with Landry Jones, I don't think, moving forward. But when it comes to backup quarterbacks, and I think people need to understand the term backup quarterback, you tell me what you think a backup quarterback means, Dave, but I'm going to tell you what I think a backup quarterback means. A guy that can come in a game due to injury or whatnot and finish it up and either secure the victory or get you a victory, and then a guy that can spot start a couple of games throughout the season and win some games for you. That's what I view a backup is. I don't view a backup as playing 14 games during the season, but I think Landry Jones at this point right now needs to be considered one of the league's top backup quarterbacks right now. Here's the thing. You look at his numbers. He had four incompletions yesterday, right? All right. After the first quarter, David, he was 17 of 18 for 176 yards with a TD, and his one incompletion was a dump off to Fitzgerald Toussaint that was dropped. All right. Now that doesn't look 17 of 18 might look impressive, and that 176 yards might not, because it's obviously under 200. But if you start doing the math there, that's almost 10 yards per attempt, okay? That's not bad at all. Did Landry Jones have an ugly interception against the Browns? Absolutely he did. That was a great coverage disguise by Greg Williams. And you want to talk about one of those gotcha type moments? That was it. And lack of playing time for Landry probably led to a little bit of that. No excuse for Landry, though. That was 100%, in my opinion, on him. He should have never thrown that football. The other thing was the sack fumble. Yes, Landry Jones has to do a better job of maybe sensing the pressure and making sure at worst that he just goes down and doesn't turn the football over. Yes, you put both those turnovers on him. But outside of that, I thought he made some good reads at the line of scrimmage, David. The hot kind of early in the game to Juju on the right side, and even the touchdown to Juju, I thought was a nice read. People tweeted, "Oh, he doesn't know how to sense pressure and step up in the pocket." That's BS. He has good pocket presence, in my opinion. He's got an arm. And generally, he makes good decisions, and I'm very confident in the most part with what he sees across the line of scrimmage. Now, once again, does this mean Landry Jones is going to go to the Pro Bowl anytime soon? No, but I think if you start going through the names, remember there was a poll or whatnot, was it, but before this season started, or maybe it was the end of last season, talking about ranking the backup quarterbacks and putting them in tiers. And I think Landry was in the bottom tier, or maybe he was at the bottom of the first tier. I can't remember specifically. But in my mind right now, Landry is he should be A in that top tier of backup quarterbacks in the league. And you could probably make an argument, probably, you know, top three or four.
Yeah, I don't think people around the NFL see him that way. When I think of what you – I think you described a backup quarterback well. I mean, names that jump out to me. And generally, you know, when you think of backups, we're not talking about rookies, because rookies are one of two things. They're – they're either guys who are going to be starting really soon and top draft pick type guys, first two round type guys, or they're guys more along the lines of Landry or Josh Dobbs who were taken and maybe never will get a chance to start in the NFL. But guys that, you know, you draft because you drafted that position, not every guy is a potential superstar, and you give them an opportunity. And Landry Jones, I mean, you look at guys like, you know, Matt Moore, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Nick Foles. I mean, you go through a list of guys who have gotten Josh McCown. You know, Case Keenum and Josh McCown are the ultimate guys who this year, you know, older guys who'd been around the league who really stepped up and improved their stock and how people view them because they're capable with talent around them. And obviously Case Keenum had a lot more talent around him than Josh McCown did. You know, Mike Glennon was a guy the Bears hoped would be able to step up and do that and didn't do it as well. But I think those are the names who I think you think of or I think of similarly to Landry Jones and what you have. And then you know, there's a whole other list of guys, you know, like McCarron, who's not really ever had his chance yet. You know, again, higher end guys who you think people think might have a higher end, but we'll wait and see. But yeah, Landry Jones, and that's why I've kind of advocated signing him last year to kind of exactly the deal that they signed him to. He's cheap. He's capable. Ben likes him. That's worth something in that locker room. And certainly with all the drama the Steelers have had over the course of this season, having a guy that your starting quarterback trusts to help you with, you know, what he may be seeing, the helping being eyes and ears on the sideline, now with Randy Feetner on the sideline and organizing that type of stuff. All those things are positive things for the Steelers. So, yeah, Landry 23 for 27. 239, 1-1. I mean, a passer rating of 100 and a QBR of 69. Interestingly, Kaiser had almost exactly the same passer rating and QBR at 98.5 and 64. Similar games, very different types of players. I mean, Kaiser obviously showed some things with his legs that I'm sure Browns fans wish he had done more of during the course of the season. Connected on some big plays, which, well, you know, one was a deep ball, one was more of a catch and run. Also made some of the worst throws I've seen all season by any quarterback, not just in Steeler games, just some horrendous types of throws. So, you know, the Browns are going to continue looking for the quarterback position. But I thought the juxtaposition of quarterback play yesterday was really fascinating because you saw a guy who really understands what he's trying to do, understands his offense, and is not the most talented guy in the world and was efficient versus a guy who has crazy physical talents, clearly doesn't have any idea, as far as I could tell a lot of the time, what he's doing out there, but was able to make plays. And, you know, some of them responsibility of the Steelers defense, but they still did it, and he did it with his legs. And it just so I just thought on the spectrum of quarterback play, you saw just polar opposites in what happened in the game yesterday. And I just thought it was the interesting overlay on a game that had zero meaning. You know, before the game it felt that way, and after the game it certainly turned out that way. The only meaning was the Browns, you know, going in the record books at the end of the day at 0-16. Okay, Dave, let me throw – the star of the show was obviously Juju Smith-Schuster. Fantastic. All the things that we've kind of gushed about this season with Juju were on display. The you know, willing to just the physical nature of the receiver that he is, and making, you know, just challenged catches at various points in the field. The kick return was crazy, breaking tackles, physical, and then showing speed again to run away from guys, which continues to be, I think, the thing that maybe most has surprised me. I mean, I knew he was a physical receiver, and that's amazing to see with such a young guy at age 21, you know, the combativeness of his ability. But running away from guys I thought was great. I mean, he just put an exclamation point on a superb rookie season.
Boy, just wait till he learns how to run routes. And I say that being funny. He's not a, you know, he's not a bad route runner now. But I mean, there's
he's not Mike Wallace, Sammy Coates, or Martavis Bryant.
Right.
Already.
He's not a one trick pony. But there's obviously sometimes that, you know, you can see him possibly, you know, come back to the football better, not round some things off sometimes like he does. But, you know, and then again, we saw like a great nod route a couple of weeks ago. You know, in that game that led to the that nod route was so good that the defensive back did not even have a chance to hold him. You know, to
quit. So 2 steps later, he knew it was over.
Right. I mean, it's one thing to get beat. It's another thing to get beat so bad that you didn't even have a chance to
recover.
To illegally prevent a touchdown. You know, and that's how good that nod route was. But I say that all in fun, obviously, but he will become a better route runner. All the things that you start talking about when you start checking off the boxes with receiver. Now, look, he's probably not one of the fastest guys in the NFL, but neither was Jerry Rice, right? You know,
Juju's football fast, man. I was just surprised he ran away from those guys. I was surprised in Detroit, and I was surprised again yesterday that he had defensive backs at midfield, and they didn't gain on him.
Right,
that's really impressive.
He's got football speed. He's got on the field football speed. He's got the kind of speed that makes you go back and say, "Did I miss the speed on tape?" You know.
And he knows just little things. He understands. I mean, you just watch him as he was shifting his line, running that kickoff return. Same thing against the Lions. Not running straight, running at angles, understanding where the guys were behind him so that he was absolutely maximizing his distance between, you know, that the guys had to go to get him. And just little subtle things like that make a difference. Juju did it again yesterday. Really impressive.
Yeah, I think he's got – I mean, you want to talk about foot, you know, some kind of things that really – really we don't know on the outside, and that's kind of football IQ, if you will, when we go to kind of break down these players in the offseason and all. He seems to have – do you remember what he ran at the combine, David, as a 40?
It feels like – I'm sure this isn't it exactly, but for some reason 4.56 is jumping out at me.
4.54, you know, right? Yeah, it was in the 4.5 range. So, you know, that goes to show you that he wasn't a burner. Now, he did the things that you have to remember is his overall triangle numbers, what we call triangle numbers, were good. I mean, he had a 20-yard shuttle of I think it was 4.18, the three cone under 7 there. So, you know, what I learned from Pat Kerwin over the years as well too, sometimes is you take that 20-yard shuttle number and then you subtract it from the 40 time, and then that kind of gives you a suddenness, a change of direction number. And obviously the higher that differential number is, now obviously you don't want to play a running 4.7 and then having a great 20-yard shuttle. There might be something there, but if you can get that number in the 0.4 to 0.5 range, that with him having a good, you know, 4.5 or so 40 time, that gives you a little bit of an idea of kind of quickness, if you will, change of direction on that. And that's what Juju had. So, you know, when you go by, like I said, when you go down checking all the boxes with a player, football speed, ability to get in and out of breaks, hands and not kind of double clutching, route tree stuff, the ability to make combative catches. If there's one thing that we knew about Juju at his time at USC is and why the comparisons were made to Anquan Boldin, was he can make combative catches. And we saw him make one of those yesterday against Cleveland as well.
With McCourty's arms wrapped around him, I mean – great play by Juju, bad play by McCourty. But Juju did all the right things that you want to do. Got his body between him and the defensive back. Went up and, you know, tried to high point the ball while getting his arms held. McCourty did do one thing very well, as he watched where Juju caught the ball and then got his hands in between Juju's arms and tried to knock the ball away. And I think he actually maybe got his fingers on the ball. And Juju showed really strong hands to be able to hold on to that. You're right. That was a contested catch, and it was a really good catch.
And you know, one other thing that that we look at, that the team never got out of Marcus Wheaton, the team really hasn't gotten out of Eli Rogers, is yards after the catch. And Juju is able to get yardage after the catch, one way or the other, you know, and that's good to see as well too. So, you know, without turning this into Juju Depot, I mean, yesterday was an exclamation point on a fantastic rookie season for Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, star of the show. 9 for 143, a kickoff return for a touchdown. Finished his, you know, we were talking about going into the game, you know, having 50 for 800, and he finishes, you know, well above that for over 900, a rookie yards receiving record.
He missed two games. He missed one with a hamstring.
One a hammy and one a suspension.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if he would have played in all 16 games, 1,000-yard receiver easily.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting here is just curious. I don't have any insight here, so it's just you wonder how much of training camp, to Landry Jones' time in training camp, probably primarily spent throwing to Juju and doing that kind of stuff. I mean, Martavis Bryant still had 6 catches, and really, you know, nobody else was a big part of the offense. He targeted his outside guys, or Juju and Martavis, of 17 of his 27 throws. So the tight ends, who have been big parts of the offense, weren't part of this. The backs weren't a big part of this. This was the Juju and Martavis show, and those are guys I'm sure. Landry's had a ton of reps with those guys this year. So
you know, wait a minute here. Yeah, did you listen to Landry after the game?
Didn't hear anything he said.
He said just the opposite of that. I don't get to work with those guys. You know,
so who is he throwing to then? If he's, I mean, you think he's throwing to Justin Hunter and Darius Heyward-Bey? I mean, I assume in camp he got all the work with those guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, but how long ago has that been? You know,
that's fair enough. Fair enough. I'm sure he got the reps this week, all week. I'm sure he doesn't get many reps otherwise. I mean, you know, Josh Dobbs didn't get a lot of reps either. So
did he
was getting with somebody else, or did he just say he's not getting reps with those guys?
I think the question was particularly about Juju, and he says, yeah. I don't get to work with him, you know. That makes sense. So yeah, I mean, who is Landry probably working with most of the time? Justin Hunter, DHB, maybe Eli Rogers here and there. Some of these, you know, the tight ends, obviously. Landry, you know, that's another thing I think that you need to take into account when you do talk about Landry Jones and his performance on Sunday, is he hasn't had probably a ton of reps with a lot of these guys, and obviously he didn't have Antonio Brown on the field yesterday. He didn't have, how many linemen was he missing?
Didn't have Lev Bell, didn't have the linemen, so
yeah, didn't have Le'Veon Bell, was missing several linemen, and here are people. The Landry Jones haters out there, and I'm sure several of them are listening to this podcast today as well too. Their defense is, it was Cleveland.
Yeah, it's the NFL. Cleveland's. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it's fine. That's fine to say. But it wasn't, you know, Landry didn't have the all-star cast either. I mean, look, everybody understands the parameters of that game. And, you know, I think people were looking to make excuses either way. And like we talked about beforehand, this was a lose-lose for Mike. It came out as good as it could have come out, and it came out exactly the same as last year's game came out, where Darius Heyward-Bey was kind of the hero at the end, knocking loose an interception that looked like it was going to be returned for a touchdown against Landry Jones. And Darius Heyward-Bey coming, you know, all the way across the field to make the play that gave the Steelers a chance to win that in overtime, that Landry Jones to Kobe Hamilton touchdown pass. So the Steelers snuck out of win with that game. And I think there were a lot of presumptions about what was then going to happen in the playoffs. And obviously they hammered Miami and then beat the Chiefs on the road. So I'm not going to take too much from this game. We've spent our time talking about the offensive side of the ball. The offensive side of the ball mostly did what you hoped it would do, other than turning it over twice. But if you want to talk about this game, man, this is the defensive side of the ball is the issue, because this is the Steeler team that's going to be playing out there in the playoffs, less Cam Hayward. And Tyson Alulu got the Steelers off to a great start with a with a sack in Hayward's place, and the Steelers broke their record for all-time sacks. But Dave, if there's an issue here, it continues to be the issue. It's really kind of, what's the pass defense doing here and still giving up big plays? You know, they gave up a big play with only one receiver in a route to a really good, talented receiver, but a one receiver route beats you for 54 yards down the sideline, almost touchdown. You got to ask some questions. You had another kid who never caught a touchdown pass in 31 games catch two against you. If you want to raise red flags out of that game, that's certainly where you're raising them.
It's not only that. Not only are you getting beat for big plays down the field, you're getting beat by some of the same ones you've already been beat by.
Right.
That's the identical play that the Patriots ran just a couple weeks ago, and to make it even worse, it was the same play just a few weeks ago, only going a different direction in the field.
Chris Hogan to me early in the game,
Brandon Cooks
on the first or second drive of the game where he ran a post corner.
Right. And it's only a few weeks apart here. It's one thing for an opposing play caller to go back to go after a few things that you were beat on earlier in the season to see if you fixed them. And look, I mean, that's an offensive coordinator's job. They go back and they try to exploit big play weaknesses that you had on tape and try to recreate them a little bit, maybe same concept, different personnel, different formations and all. I mean, that's what they do. That, it's no secret there. And to think that this only happened a couple of weeks ago against the Patriots, and then you go out and you get beat with the same thing again, only on the opposite of the side of the field. That's what's to me is concerning there. And oh boy, this might be a little bit of a surprise to our listeners. Let me clear my throat here. Make sure I get this out correctly. Mike Mitchell's not going to the Pro Bowl this year. Okay, Mike Mitchell, let me get this out there. Mike Mitchell is not going to the Pro Bowl next year either, or if he's still in the league, the year after that. However, for the people that immediately want to jump on Mike Mitchell on this play, the game against the Patriots, you need some work on your football IQ. You have got to respect the middle of the field in that situation. If you knew which way the route was going to break, that's one thing. You could guess if you feel like guessing that he's going to break that to the corner, because that's what you've been beat for before. However, if he gives you a nod on that and beats you down the middle of the field, then it's really your fault. Then a safety does not know which way that route's going to break at the top of it there, and you still have to do what is your duty in that cover three situation. That's protect the middle of the field deep. And Joe Hayden did not sink. At worst, that ball should be contested a little bit more by Joe Hayden on the underneath. To expect Mike Mitchell to get over the top in that situation, if you're listening to this podcast and you're doing that, you are a fool, okay? I wonder how many people just clicked off right there.
Couple things there that's really, really interesting about that play and about this whole conversation is, look, Steelers safety play this year has not been the best. You know, we've been critical of Sean Davis, and I think rightly so. He had a sack and an INT yesterday. On that play, Sean Davis is blitzing, and it was just – if you watch it again, look, the Steelers don't know at the time that there's only one receiver in the route, but that's the case. You know, it's amazing how few receivers the Browns had into their play design. And on that play, which, you know, the Steelers blitzed a lot in this game, on that particular play, Sean Davis got picked up really well. And I can't remember if it was Duke Johnson or Crowell or who picked him up, but he didn't get there. And what was interesting, and people have, you know, yelled at me before when I talk about this and they say, oh, you know, it's cover, you know, it's cover two or whatever. That doesn't absolve the corner from anything behind him. And in that play, Joe Hayden, it's really, if you just watch what happens, even just on the television replay of the game, Joe Hayden points as Sean Gordon's going by him, Josh Gordon's going by him, excuse me, he points to something back to his right. The only thing back to his right is Mike Mitchell. So he makes some kind of hand gesture acknowledging what's going on, which I didn't fully understand because it didn't look like he was going to have any responsibility in the flat. And he might have had a little, you know, responsibility inside, but it was just an odd – I thought it was an odd play by Joe Hayden. And I, look, I don't want to be critical of Joe Hayden here, but I saw I've seen some commentary over the past month about Joe Hayden. And I think people look at the Steelers' pass defense before Joe Hayden, and we highlighted it, Dave highlighted it, and after Joe Hayden, and suggest that, you know, because of that, Joe Hayden's, you know, been a Pro Bowl corner. I don't think that's the answer here. It's, you know, it's a little, most of the difficulty here, it was the performance of Cody Sensabaugh and maybe to a lesser degree of Cam Sutton wasn't very good. And the Steelers played some teams who, you know, were able to get after the passing game a little bit more, and game situations dictated it. I mean, Joe Hayden's been good, and the Steelers are lucky to have him. But Joe Hayden has not been, you know, nobody's talking about Joe Hayden with the elite cornerbacks in the NFL. And I think, you know, we see these plays and we see, you know, some of this stuff. And because, you know, we've been critical at times of the safeties, you know, Joe Hayden's gotten a pass on some of these things. Joe Hayden has to do a better job there. I mean, he can't just pass that guy off to Mike Mitchell and assume that he's going to, you know, cover him, man, you know, basically have man coverage on him all over the field, which if you're 100% blaming Mike Mitchell, that's what you're saying.
Well, right. I mean, Mike Mitchell's hung out dry in that situation. You know, like I said, you've still got to respect the middle of the field because that might end up being a deep post, you know?
Now, having said that, I do think Mike Mitchell should have ID'd the play earlier in a one man route situation and gotten over to that side of the field sooner. I think there's fault here on Mike Mitchell as well.
Well, there's no way you're gonna break that up.
Probably not.
You know, the thing is, he's got to wait till he commits at the top of his route, and once he commits, I mean. There's just no way. There's not many safeties in the league that's going to get over there. The way that ball, and it was a well thrown ball on top of it. You know, it was.
Yeah, it was also the perfect play call against it. You know, when you're blitzing your other safety, so Mitchell's back there alone. You got your other safety down in the box coming on a blitz. So you know, tip of the hat to the Browns. The other play, the other touchdown pass, maybe. If you remember Larry Fitzgerald in Super Bowl, whatever it was, in Tampa, you know, this is a pass caught by a guy who's not a burner with T.J. Watt in coverage. And, you know, T.J. Watt's done some good things in coverage, but you're asking a lot to put you're asking too much. Not that you should never do it because play design, you know, your scheme design requires it at times. But covering a guy out of the slot, running a little slant and go over the middle. Well, we've seen T.J. Watt make those plays, but they're still hard plays to make. He got beat on this one, a step behind. But what you can't have is you can't have a guy take that ball with your two safeties at least 10 yards back from where he initially catches the ball and run between him for a touchdown. I mean, it just can't happen, and that's what happened on that play.
Yeah, and I mostly put that one on Sean Davis as well, too. There, you know, you got to make sure you get the guy on the ground there. Let it be a 12-15 whatever yard play. You got to get him on the ground there, and he, you know, he took a little bit of a bad angle there talking about Sean Davis, and then once Higgins split him, that was it. So yeah, a little bit on T.J. Watt, you know, with the coverage there, but I mean that's a mismatch. If you can get a wide receiver on or a running back on an outside linebacker there in that situation, and More than anything, you got to get the player down on the field and leave yourself some blades of grass to defend. And look, you want to go back to that play, the play to Gordon that we just recapped there. At least credit Mike Mitchell for getting them out of bounds down on the ground. And a bit, you know, how many times this year have we seen the Steelers get home run and not get the guy down on the ground? Mitchell and whoever, Sensabaugh or whoever, not be able to save grass to defend. At least they did it in that situation. Now, the Browns obviously scored after that. But, man, it's bad enough to give up explosive plays in the game. It's bad enough to give up double or triple explosive plays in the game. But just don't let them end up in the end zone, you know. Get those guys on the ground. So, yeah, I mean, splitting the safeties in that situation with a guy that probably runs, what does Higgins run, 4.58, 4.6 or something?
Yeah, he is the epitome of just a guy.
You know, so, the explosive, I'm trying to remember what the Steelers gave up explosive play-wise in that game. 56 was that play to Higgins, I think, that went for a touchdown.
Yeah, 56 and 54, the Browns' two longest plays of the year.
The 54 to Gordon, yeah, the two longest of the season. Imagine that.
And two 30s, Duke had a 30 screen in the – I mean, I don't know if both screens, you know, went. One of them he obviously fumbled on. Njoku had a 34-yarder. Coleman had an 18-yarder.
Njoku, Hayden can't miss that tackle. That was on Hayden right there.
Really bad tackle.
That was brutal. The one on Josh Gordon, the 33 yards. Artie Burns gets trapped inside, and there's a
– what was Artie doing on that play? I mean, I'm looking at him. The play's coming at him. And all of a sudden, the receiver's blocking him from behind, which I think in that case was okay. But, I mean, Artie didn't react. It was odd. I watched it a bunch of times. I was like, what's Artie doing? It didn't make any sense to me.
Right. Josh Gordon gets that lane to the outside there. And then, another thing I think that stuck out the most, and we'll see if the Steelers have to deal with this in the playoffs, probably not, a very mobile quarterback in Deshaun Kizer. What did he have? Three scrambles? That is like, my goodness, that's when you really miss Ryan Shazier, you know, in those situations, being able to spy a guy like Kizer, because he had some scrambles, and I think several of them were on third down. Let's see, he had a third and 17. I know he had a first down. He had several third down scrambles that converted. Yeah. I remember that.
Well, you know, we talk about Kizer again, and you talked about Landry Jones, you know, yards per attempt. I mean, Kizer's numbers are off the charts. I mean, 30 attempts, 314 yards. So he averaged over 10 yards per attempt. And, you know, average per completion, 19.6. I mean, there were some dump-offs, but they were dump-offs that went for big plays. And I think if you're the Steelers, I mean, you get beat by that screen pass where William Gay kind of makes it was a great play because it worked out. It wasn't a great tackle. I mean, William Gay's kind of watching the play develop, and he's running alongside, and he goes in for the kill, and he succeeded. So good on William Gay. Steelers get the turnover. The Browns come right back and run that play again on him and get another 30 yards. I mean, it was, you know, the Browns aren't really a screen team so much. And in this case, you know, they took the Steelers apart back-to-back in that fourth quarter and put them in a chance to potentially win the game. I mean, and man, I'll tell you, on the very last play that the Browns ran offensively, one, it looked like they were going to sack Kizer. Two, he gets away. Three, as you just alluded to, Dave, I mean, the guy showed some good running skill. I thought, and I'm not second-guessing him, I thought as the play was developing, oh, he's going to run. He'll easily run for the first down. But he obviously saw how wide open Corey Coleman was, said, well, I mean, I could run for the first down, but I can get an extra 10 here just tossing it to Corey. You won't see a worse drop than that, boy.
I thought he was going to get – my initial thought was they got him.
I thought they had him too. I mean, they did. You know, he was in there. He was in there.
And then it was like the whole play went in slow motion. After that, he was able to escape. And you're thinking, oh Lord. And then you see him, you know, deliver the football to Corey. I mean, that You talk about circling plays sometimes where your team needs to make them in order to win a game. That was one of them. And you won't look. I joked on Twitter last night. The Browns could go to bed early last night because they already saw the ball drop.
Yeah. I saw a couple people had that line that they had their drop 8 hours early.
horrible drop. And really, you know, do the Steelers stop them if Corey Coleman converts there?
You think keep him out of the end zone? 50-50. I don't, you know, who knows? It's hard to have a ton of confidence that defense at that point was, you know, the Browns were actually, you know, feeling the momentum at that point in time. Felt like they could move the football.
I mean, that play, it was a 4th-and-2 play, right? And how far down the field did Kaiser throw that football?
Probably 8 or 10 yards. I think it was at the 11-yard line is where he was standing.
Okay, and play was started from the 27 there, so
maybe it was the 16, but right in that area.
Yeah, and they would—I mean, they less than 2 minutes, a little less than 2 minutes from it. They had
time no factor.
Right, time was no factor there. So you know, that play very, very easily, I think, cost them the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Look, do you want the Steelers to win the game? Obviously, I didn't want to see the Browns go 0-16, but that was, you know, that was obviously secondary at that point in time. They've had their opportunities during the season, and you had Chicago the week before. You had other games during the year that they could have won. Again, if you look at DVOA metrics or all sorts of different metrics, they're not. You can argue they're not the worst team in the NFL. You can argue they're certainly much better than the 0-16 Lions. But at the end of the day, they didn't win the football game, and certainly in the first half, we saw reasons that would make me, honestly, I hate saying it, but that would make me fire Hugh Jackson. I mean, the fact that DeShone Kizer, with 2 seconds left in the first quarter, is taking a timeout on his own half yard line, where a delay a game penalty is going to move the ball, you know, the length of a football, or the quarter is going to run out. So he has no sense of what's going on in either of those situations. The fact that, again, you know, you don't want to put physical – I don't like to put physical mistakes on coaching staffs, but, you know, a guy getting drawn offside on a field goal attempt, just physical and mental lapses in week 17 that, you know, if they changed their, you know, original thinking and decided to fire Hugh Jackson, would not surprise me at all.
Even so, this is the best 0-16 team of all time.
Yep, better than the other one.
let's talk about a few other guys. I thought, boy, I just about went over backwards in this chair, David.
You would have Stephen Ridley. Stephen Ridley.
You would have paid to see me go over backwards here. Stephen Ridley had a nice game. It was good to see that. You don't like to see him put, even though the ground, you know, ground kind of, you know, the elbow was down and all like that. You want to see a guy hold on to the football. Look, one of those early runs that he had over there to the right side when I think Matt Filer pulled out to his right, and they had a full the fullback lead. I think you had McDonald coming across the formation as well too. That run very well could have ended up in the end zone because Ridley broke a tackle, was in the secondary, and I think the turf monster got him about 12 yards down the field. That could have very easily went for a touchdown there. But Ridley, I thought, did some good things. I thought Toussaint had a few nice runs in there. And talking about Filer, remember, I've hit on him a couple times when we've talked on the podcast this year, David, talking about I think the Steelers like this this guy. I thought he had a good game. To ask a guy to come in there and start at right guard for you, probably a position he hasn't practiced a lot since you know, training camp and all. I thought he represented himself well. And even on top of that, you got to remember that for a lot of the game, he had to work next to a guy at center that I guarantee you probably hadn't taken a lot of snaps at center this year or in practice in Chris Hubbard. And, you know, there's the whole communication thing and continuity thing. And you gotta understand that probably Hubbard's going to miss some assignments in there. I thought Matt Filer represented himself very well in that game. And this is a guy that, assuming he sticks on the roster from here on out to the rest of the season, a guy that I think can become sort of the Swiss Army knife that Hubbard has been for you, a guy that can play tackle, a guy that can play guard. And, you know, I think Steeler fans need to make sure they're familiarized themselves with Matt Filer's name.
I didn't hear if Mike added anything on B.J. Finney in the injury report.
Now, being evaluated, and they originally called it, a thigh injury. And I posted a replay of the GIF up on my Twitter feed first thing this morning for Dr. Mel to look at. But I'm obviously not a doctor, but it doesn't look like, it's hard to even distinguish what the injury might have been.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing maybe a hip pointer or some sort of a bruised thigh or something like that.
Anything that's a contusion, and, you know, they're not talking knee, is a big deal in a positive way.
Right, and we'll see what Dr. Mel has to say. Maybe we'll write up something about that this week here. But and I thought Finney was representing himself pretty decent at center, you know, early in that game before leaving. And as we've talked in the past before, David, I think Finney's a better guard than he is a center. So any work that you can get with him at center and it be positive, I think that's a good sign there. I haven't gotten a chance to really watch a lot of how Marcus Gilbert or Alejandro Villanueva or Ramon Foster played in that game. I will say this about Hubbard. And look, this is another thing. When you go to talk about Landry Jones and his performance in that game against the Browns, there were a lot of bad snaps by Hubbard, and that was to be expected. Went into the books two aborted snaps in that game there, and a few others that Landry Jones had to deal with that weren't ideal. And when you throw in that, you know, what, two-thirds of that game he had to play without, you know, Finney in there. You know, that's something else to add a little bit. I don't want to call it a mystique of Landry Jones, but, you know, you got to take your hat off and hand it to him.
Okay, so offensively, okay, Bryant, fine. We talked about most of the other guys. You know, Darius Hayward-Bey gets a touchdown, reminiscent of the Florida game last year when he went 60 yards I think it was an end of round last time. This was a reverse from Fitz.
But that was all him too. He broke some.
That was back tackling by the Browns.
Yeah, missed tackles and breaking tackles by whatever one you want to call it.
The defensively, you know, we.
How many? Look, what did they say? What was it? Only eight times this year. This is during their opening possession. Only eight times this season the Steelers had scored on their opening possession. And how many times it's been touchdowns. But look, the fact alone that you don't have all your horses there. And yeah, I know it's the Browns, yada yada. But the fact that you're able to march down the field in the manner that they did and score a touchdown, I think says something.
Yeah, a lot of people, and I'm not going to tell anybody whether they're right or wrong because I don't know the answer myself, but a lot of people wanted to say, you know, well, this doesn't count for the defense because the game doesn't mean anything. You know, look, I do think there's, you know, obviously they're going to be hyped up and ready to go in the playoffs, and there'll be more energy in the stadium. There'll be more everything 2 weeks from now when the Steelers play their next game. But it's also those guys aren't out there not trying. I mean, it's you know, that's your Steelers defense, and they didn't play very well. So, you know, I don't want to put too much emphasis on it, but I don't completely dismiss it. And I'm sure Keith Butler's not going to dismiss it either.
Here's the thing about that defense, too, and talking about explosive plays. I think they allowed 48 pass plays alone, all right, of explosive plays 20 yards or more. 48. Do you know what the average yardage of those 48 plays were, David?
These are of the explosive plays?
Explosive pass plays that have gone 20 yards or more. The Steelers have allowed.
Yeah. So just for our listeners, the answer should be, it should be, and it's not going to be. The answer should be like 24 yards because you're going to have a lot of passes in the low 20s and then the occasional outlier. Unfortunately, the Steelers had a ton of passes against them over 30 yards. So I'm going to guess it's around 30.
The league average, believe it or not, according to Pro Football Reference, is 30.7 yards.
Okay. Really? It's that high? Okay.
Right. Because you got to remember, explosive plays 20. So.
Yep. Yeah, no, I was counting that. Yep. Okay. So I would have thought the league average was 24, 25.
All right. The Steelers average on those 48 pass plays, explosive plays, 34.4. Second highest in the league this year. All right, so
behind who?
Houston.
Huh.
Wouldn't have guessed that. Houston gave up 53 explosive pass plays this year, and it looks like.
Who had the highest average?
Houston. Houston.
Oh, they had the highest average as well. Did they have the highest number and the highest average?
No, they did not. Indianapolis gave up 63 explosive pass plays.
Wow. So what was Houston's average? 34.57. 34.57. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, Steelers were 5 yards above the average. Okay. Just in terms of snaps, we talk about Vance and Jesse James and who's what and what. They both played the same number of snaps yesterday, 37 out of 59. So that was interesting note. Eli, 26 snaps. Rosie had 17, got two chances down at the goal line, couldn't punch it in. Grimble only six snaps. Hunter and Hayward Bay, 4 and 3. So that's your notable on the offense. On the defense, pretty much as expected, the numbers. Watt and Dupree played about three quarters of the snaps overall, 47 each. We did see L.J. Fort on the field in this one, 20 snaps. William Gay, 22. Javon Hargrave, 23. Sean Spence, 43. So L.J. and Sean Spence roughly splitting time, with Sean Spence getting two-thirds of it. Now, obviously, there's some package stuff in there. Moats and Chickalo each got a couple series. They got 18 snaps. So everybody, Cam Sutton got three snaps. Big Dan got two. Everybody got in there except Tyler Matakevich and Dave. I don't know if it was who Alex wrote about it. What Mike Tomlin said about Tyler Matakevich, because this was a little bit odd. This is worth talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he said he's going to require surgery at the end of the season on that shoulder. So I don't know which way you want to go with that here, but
well, I thought it was interesting that he said for those who didn't see it, it's up on Steelers Depot. Mike's quote was along the lines of, he's not an every down in and out linebacker, but he's a special teams player. I mean, he really categorized him as a special teams player, which is interesting to look back and say that L.J. Fort still wasn't the first guy who went in there for Ryan Shazier when he went down against Cincinnati. It was just kind of an odd way of looking at things. He said it doesn't bother him when he plays special teams, but as soon as you went in there to be an every down player, his shoulder didn't function the same, essentially. Which I guess you're not. It seems to me that it's exactly the same job. You're shedding blockers and trying to make tackles. And I don't know what the difference is in special teams versus as a player. I mean, obviously you got more traffic around you as an inside linebacker on every play, but I can't distinguish the difference in what your body is, what you're asking your body to do, Dave. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, here's the exact quote. He says, Tyler is a guy who has been dealing with a shoulder injury that's going to have to be fixed after the season. It's going to allow him to participate on special teams. He's been dealing with it for the better part of the year. He had no issues dealing with it as a special teams player, but the minute he checked in at inside linebacker for Ryan Shazier, he had issues with it and hasn't been able to finish the game. That being said, Tyler Matakevich is essentially a special teams player and not a down-in, down-out linebacker candidate. That makes you kind of shake your head and make sure you read that right,
That's funny because I did read it three times because, again, I can't distinguish how it's different what you're asking a special teams guy to do I mean, he's in there trying to block punts, taking on linemen, you know, jumping, tackling on special teams. I don't know what's different, but.
Yeah, the only thing I can kind of figure is, you run down and have to tackle on special teams. Probably not a lot of times are you having to use your arms as much to fend off, you know, blocker. But even so, it's like Mike kind of contradicts himself inside this thing. He makes excuse for why he's not in there first, and then he ends it with saying, well, he's essentially a special teams player, not a down-in, down-out linebacker candidate. So pats him on the butt and then flaps him over the back with the backhand on top of him. Now, am I surprised that if indeed Mike Tomlin and the rest of the coaches do not consider Tyler Matakavis as a down in down out linebacker candidate? No, I'm not surprised by that. But I think the word I don't know, maybe this got transcribed a little bit off kilter. I don't know, but it sure does not make sense. The only thing that makes sense out of the whole everything that Tomlin said, the way it's written, is that he's going to need surgery after the season's over.
Yeah, going to be, you know, we talked about the Steelers carrying 9 linebackers this year, and obviously none of us know what the future holds for Ryan Shazier. So, you know, putting him aside from this conversation, but you've got it's going to be interesting to see how different the Steelers linebacker core looks next year, because Arthur Motes isn't going to be back. James Harrison's obviously not going to be back. You don't know what happened. You know, we'll guess on Tyler Matakavich and LJ Fort. Nobody would be surprised if one of those guys weren't back, or both of those guys. I mean, you know, maybe Matakavich with the fixed shoulder is back because he's a special teams ace, but, wouldn't expect Sean Spence to be back. So you could be looking at a very different group of guys. And we talk about what the Steelers might need to do. You know, we're getting ahead of ourselves in free agency. The linebacker position, they may be looking for another Stevie Johnson, Arthur Motes, another type of guy to help them in free agency, because I'm sure this linebacker position is going to be very different. The only guys that are going to be back for sure, I mean, you assume Chicolo's back, I guess, but, for sure, obviously T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree are going to be back and Vince will be back. But, you know, after that, don't write it in pen yet.
Well, it's obviously too early to speculate about Ryan Shazier, but, I mean, let's face it right now. It's probably going to be a while on Ryan Shazier at best. I don't even want to try to go down that road yet, but let me ask you this. It would not surprise me, and it probably would not surprise you, if the Miami Dolphins cut Lawrence Timmons after the season, right?
Not at all.
Would you bring Lawrence Timmons back on a veteran minimum contract 1 year?
I mean, my initial inclination is no, definitely not. He's probably going to be a backup to Vince, and you're not going to play both of them inside together, I wouldn't think.
Well, let's assume Ryan Shazier's not. Let's make the worst case scenario for Ryan Shazier right now is that he won't be ready for the start of the 2018 season.
Yeah, I don't see them playing side by side. I don't see you going into the season with Ryan Shazier, with Lawrence Timmons and Vince Williams side by side. I don't see that.
I don't see that as being an every down option, no. But
so I don't know. Does he want to sign?
I could see it as a kind of a base kind of option. Look, if and this is a big if Lawrence Timmons were to return, there's no way he's playing 1,000. Snaps in the season. It would obviously be on a very diminished role, if you will. And look, at his age now, the only way the Steelers do bring back linebackers back in this situation is as reserve players and for the minimum.
I just don't think a 31-year-old, 32-year-old guy. I don't see it. I don't see his best football's behind him.
But they're going to have to do something there regardless.
Yeah.
I think that's evident there. Maybe a guy, Sean Spence, is a guy that would quickly sign a 1-year minimum contract to compete in training camp once again. Obviously, he's not the long-term answer. You would kind of cringe if you went into next season with Vince and Sean Spence as, you know, your two starters there. So you would have to think maybe this is a position now that they could address early in the draft. And obviously,
gotta think first two rounds.
You know,
even if Ryan says you're fully healthy, I think your first two rounds you were going inside linebacker. Yes, top priority.
And obviously, you keep praying and hoping good things for Ryan Shazier as well too. Anything else we need to knock out? I mean, we spent an hour on a meaningless game. What about that James Harrison in a Patriots uniform?
Yeah, you know, look, I happen to be correct on the fact that I felt like he was going to play a lot of snaps. He did. Some of them were late in the game. I'm sure everybody in the world has seen he got two sacks at the very end of the game, strip sack and then another sack. There were some people making a big deal about the fact that Patriots weren't mobbing him after the play, running over and hugging him and high-fiving him. I mean, it's a 26-6 game or whatever the score was with 40 seconds left. So, yes, it was garbage time, but at garbage time, the offensive linemen aren't looking to get their quarterback killed. So they're still, again, they're trying. let's not completely look. Did it matter? No, it doesn't matter, but it still happened. I mean, the guys are still out there making plays, trying to make plays. So, yeah, good on James. Again, played 30 snaps. I'm sure the Patriots aren't going to cut him this week or next week, and he'll be dressed and probably get a fair bit of work when they play their first playoff game in Foxborough.
He played about 10 snaps more than I thought he would. They got him down in the game book as 27 of 59 total snaps there. So almost half of the defensive snaps there. And again, in their kind of late situation there, maybe that doesn't happen. But here's the thing. And we've seen this with James Harrison most recent years. A lot of his sacks are coming late in games in obvious pass rush situations in games that aren't close. Now, they still count. You know, they obviously still count.
Yeah, he's asked to go rush the passer, and he's doing it.
So. Right, and you know, he beat a fairly decent tackle on Kelvin Beachum on both those plays. Now, it was the last two people say, well, were there meaningless sacks? Yeah, I mean, I've been a fan of a long time for a long time now. We should be able to rank players and their sacks a little bit better than what we are now instead of just putting a one in the category. But he did what he was supposed to do in the situation. Let's get the quarterback down on the ground there. It will be interesting to see how they use him moving forward. And at this point now, yes, they're not, I think he showed enough to them yesterday that they're probably not going to cut him for the rest of the playoffs there. I haven't looked at all 27 of his snaps, but I thought he did a good job on setting a run on a few of those snaps and then came up and made a nice hit. On who was it? Robbie Anderson, I think, after dropping into coverage there. So, to be determined, as they like to say, when it comes to James Harrison. What did you think about the Baltimore Ravens collapse?
Man, I'll tell you, give Harbaugh and Alex Collins credit down 27-14, I think it was, and they go for fourth and three, and Collins has an unbelievable run. He's completely shut down, going over the left side, and turns it around and runs for a touchdown. The Ravens, you know, do everything they're supposed to do to get back and win a football game. Just to put it in perspective, for those who don't know the minutia of what was going on here, there's you know, whatever there was, 40, 50 seconds left, 30 seconds left. Andy Dalton's facing a fourth and 12 around midfield. So everything the Bengals have done from the day they got knocked out of the playoffs – or they didn't make the playoffs last year. From the day they got knocked out, their season ended about this time last year. Everything they've done, all the work, every minute of preparation for the entire season and the entire season comes down to if they can make one play on fourth and 12 for the Bengals at midfield on their home field, if they can make one play, they're in the playoffs. And they gave up a touchdown to Tyler Boyd. I mean, that's just – you want to crystallize everything. Obviously, everything leads to that play in the whole season, so it doesn't diminish all the other stuff. But their whole playoff lives rest on one play. If they make the play, they are in the playoffs, and they gave up a touchdown. I mean, that is – oh, my God. If you're – you know, we saw them convert a 4th-and-26 a few years ago with Ray Rice against the Chargers, I think it was. This was karma back on the Bengals, on the Ravens. I don't want to say it's inexcusable. The other guys are trying too, you know, whatever. But man, that if you're a Ravens fan, that is getting your heart torn out and handed to you.
Especially by the side of the football that's been so good all season, you know, against the pass.
Right.
You know, that had
Pittsburgh kid doing it too. Pittsburgh kid Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, that had to hurt them for sure to go, you know, to be that close. One play, you're one play away from being
a whole new life, you know,
a number 5 seed in the playoffs there, and they don't get it done. Quite honestly, David, I was disappointed that they weren't able to get it done because I think Sunday went absolutely fantastic for the New England Patriots. The day could not have gone any better for the New England Patriots, in my opinion. They took care of business against the Jets. They got to see their new player, James Harrison, on the field. It doesn't sound like they suffered any significant injuries as far as I could tell. The San Diego Chargers, even though they won, they were eliminated from the playoffs, as were the Baltimore Ravens. In my opinion, Steeler fans should have been cheering for both the Chargers and the Ravens to make the playoffs. Instead, we have the Bills and the Tennessee Titans in the playoffs. And if you were hoping that there was a team that could knock off outside of maybe the Chiefs, that could knock off the Patriots in the divisional round of the playoffs, both those teams, in my opinion, are gone. I think there is, I'll go on record, I think there's absolutely no chance that the Titans or the Bills, should it ultimately come to that, are able to knock off the Patriots.
Yeah, I agree. And I said, you know, I phrased it differently. I said, you know, things broke well for the Steelers in that the more dangerous teams, I mean, I think the Chiefs are the most dangerous team the Steelers could face here of the four. But I'm not sure that if it were the Ravens and the Chargers that I wouldn't put them ahead of the Chiefs. So obviously the same applies to New England as well. So look, the Steelers are likely to get the Jags, but you know, you don't know. And I pointed out, and everybody's pointed out a bunch of times, that the Chiefs went into New England this year and won, and the Jags went into Pittsburgh this year and won. And if they both take care of business this week, those will be the storylines. But certainly the playoff matchups in the NFC are much more enticing, even though the lines are somewhat similar. They're much more enticing from a just, you know, upset, competitive, good football team standpoint than they are in the AFC. I mean, good on Buffalo for breaking the drought and having things go their way. It's been the longest drought in major four sports franchises, 1999, since they've been in the playoffs. Titans, they kind of backdoored, but got a win they needed against the Jags to get in. I feel bad for the Chargers. Their kicking woes over the years have been costly and really cost them, you know, a couple games this year, which not only cost them the playoffs, you know, they could have won the division. I think they're an incredibly dangerous team, which I've said a bunch of times. Didn't make it in, and you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people who don't care at all about the Ravens, happy to not see them in, but I'm with you. They would have been a dangerous team going into New England. They'd be a dangerous team coming into Pittsburgh too.
Right. And all right, what's more likely to happen? Buffalo beating Jacksonville or Tennessee beating Kansas City?
I think actually Buffalo beating Jacksonville. I think if they go down there, get, you know, probably good weather down there, and they're able to run the football and control the football in a low-scoring game, if Blake Bortles doesn't play well, which is certainly possible, you know, they could win a 19-16 game down there. I think Kansas City's back on track and playing good football, and I think Kansas City wins. But you know, Buffalo, I think they can make it a competitive football game.
I'm gonna go opposite than you. I think I give Tennessee a little bit better shot. Let's not forget what this Kansas City team did in the middle of the season, David.
I mean, the defense fell apart. I mean, no doubt.
Let's not just brush that up underneath the rug there like it didn't happen. And, you know, I think Tennessee is a team that can, if you're able to run the football at times, especially in the cold months. Now, obviously, we don't know what the weather – I don't know. What's the weather going to be in Kansas City this day?
You know, that could be all over the map, right? It could be 45 and clear, or it could be, you know, 5 below.
Right, right. So, you know, maybe weather plays a little bit bigger part of this, but I like Tennessee's chances of beating Kansas City more than I do. Look, I think if the Bills beat the Jaguars, it's going to be because the Jaguars offense turns the football over. Plain and simple.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that's the only way that happened. Now, look, they have a great the Jaguars are missing some receivers, right? And then you got Tre'Davious White on the other side. Boy, I go back and I'm just thinking about breaking down his tape during the pre-draft, David. How good would that guy have looked? No offense to Cameron Sutton, but how good would Tre'Davious White looked in a Steelers uniform?
Good.
what number did he end up when was he drafted overall? Let me look.
Did he get top of the second round?
No, he was first rounder. Tre'Davious White was a first rounder.
Did he go right behind Lattimore? Lattimore went 12 and
27.
Hey, that late? Oh, so they got him in the I don't know what the trade was that they got him there, right?
Hold on here. They got him from with a trade via Kansas City, I think.
Oh, you know what that is? That's the trade for the Pat Mahomes, the Patrick Mahomes trade.
So right, exactly. They moved back. So
it worked out for them.
Let me ask you this. I will never know. Maybe Kevin Colbert will write a book one day. If Tre'Davious White had slipped down to 30, does he get past it? Do they still take T.J. Watt?
I think they probably take T.J. Watt, yeah.
I don't know about that. Tre'Davious, we'll never know. But, look, T.J. Watt, seven sacks, his rookie season. I thought he obviously had a strong rookie season there for them.
Speaking of Kansas City, that Kareem Hunt got Andy Reid talked him into letting him play, gets one carry for a 35-yard touchdown and wins the rushing title. So Gurley and Bell sat on the sidelines and good for Kareem Hunt. You know, he talked him into it. He got one carry, and then they sat him down.
Yeah, I'm still not. I'm not buying stock in that just yet with him. I said it all season long, in a couple games.
That you're not buying stock that he's good.
That he's going to be around for a while. Be the guy that people think that he is. Look, too many. His season boiled down to too many just big runs, I think. So I'm not ready to say he's going to be one of the league's top three or four rushers year in, year out moving forward. I'll put it to you that way. I still have. I'm not buying stock on him just yet.
Okay, fair enough. NFC. NFC. We'll get to that. We'll talk more about that on Friday. Let's really quickly hit on the coaching changes. The one. Surprise here, I think, for people was probably Jack Del Rio getting relieved immediately after the game, and the strong speculation from the Adam Schefters of the world, sources who are qualified to say this, and I have to say this surprises me a lot, is that John Gruden's going to take over the Raiders. I love it. I'm a huge Gruden fan. I'll be sorry to see, after that Bengals game, a lot of people soured on Gruden if you're a Steeler fan, the way he announced that game, and I understand that. Anyway, I'm a big Gruden fan. I know Dave and I both love this QB camp stuff that he does. I think he's a big personality. When you offer equity in a football team that's moving to Vegas as part of the carrot, pretty tough to turn down. I never expect guys who've been in the booth for 10 years, whether it be the Bill Cowers of the world. You can go through the list. When you have that comfortable lifestyle and you're making just about as much money as the coaches are and working about a tenth of the time, why would you trade that? you're as big a personality as you can be. You're less of a big personality as a coach than you are if you're John Gruden doing Monday Night Football or Sunday, whichever night he does. So, you know, great to see him back in the league. I'll believe it when I see it. But that to me, Dave, that was surprising that they could coax Gruden back out.
Yeah, I would like to see it one last time to see if he can do anything, you know. Intriguing, especially with a team like the Raiders. And I mean, they got a quarterback I think they can win with over there. They got some talent over there. I was a bit surprised, though, that they pulled the rug out from Del Rio so fast. So because of that, it probably is Gruden. That's going to be the guy over there. So,
and they gave it the scenario. He's going to call the playoff game on Saturday. And I mean, the guys went through, Schefter went through it, said, you know, he's going to call the playoff game Saturday, and then they'll announce him on Monday as the new coach of the Raiders. Like, this is done. And, you know, they've got to do the Rooney Rule requirements and some other things. But this does sound like fait accompli.
All right. Who else has gone? John Fox out in Chicago.
No surprise. Jim Caldwell in Detroit. Small surprise, maybe. They were, you know, Detroit and San Diego were two teams that, that just missed. And, you know, they decided to make a change in Detroit. I'm not a huge Caldwell fan, but,
Chuck Pagano out in Indianapolis, not surprising. Obviously, McAdoo out in New York. Who else?
What the heck happened after the Bengal game? What was the Steve Jackson comment of, I'd like to coach the Bengals in 2018? What was that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. What about Hugh's comments that people...
Not Hugh Jackson. It wasn't Hugh Jackson. It was
I get ready to say Hugh Jackson didn't say he wanted to coach.
Marvin Lewis.
Right. Yeah. Marvin.
Saying after the game, you know. Yeah. You know. Not. It's not just up to. He said it's complicated. You know. I'd still like to coach the Bengals in 2018. And I didn't dig a lot deeper in it. I was doing other stuff last night, but I was.
What that tells me is he wants more control with personnel and all like that.
Yeah,
he's not going to get that from Mike Brown, you know.
I've commented on this 100 times that guys like Jay Glazer were saying 12, 13, 14 coaching positions are going to open up, and I've been staunchly on the other side of this at 6 or 7 and couldn't see more than 8. So, I mean, we heard the Jets and the Tampa Bay and somebody else during the week all said, you know, we're bringing our coaches back. Denver sounds like they're on the fence, although I thought I saw something during the week that they're going to bring Vance Joseph back. The only guys left, I think, that are hanging, there are not many guys hanging in the wind right now. We don't know what Bruce Arians is doing in Arizona. But I think, you know, of the teams we haven't mentioned, I think anybody else getting fired now would be a surprise. I mean, you know, Seattle's not doing anything with Pete Carroll, obviously, and San Francisco's not doing it. You can go through the list. I don't see other guys getting fired.
Yeah, you think
Miami? What are they doing in Miami? It'd be the only. Is that the only?
What about Bill O'Brien in Houston?
I think because how good things went with Deshaun Watson and the fact that
you give him one more year is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And with all the injuries they had and with Watson looking good when he played and the offense looking dynamic, I'm bringing him back.
All right. So, what do you think about, the speculation, and I think that's all it is at this point, Ian Rappaport, claiming that the Cowboys, if they fire their offensive coordinator, don't bring their offensive coordinator back, that Todd Haley could be in their sights because Todd is in. In other words, I guess what he's alluding to is he doesn't think Todd Haley will have his contract re-upped.
You know, I don't know anything. And my I do like to guess on things like that. I would guess Todd Haley doesn't go to Dallas. I would guess Todd Haley comes back with the Steelers. I mean, that's the easier guess if you're, you know, putting if you gave me 50-50 choices, that's what I would bet happens. I'm surprised Mike Munchak's name isn't brought up for anything anywhere in any of this stuff. And I don't know if they don't, you know, they see him again as a position coach rather than a creative offensive mind. I don't have a view on that. But Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Steelers staff because, again, we had a defense that way outperformed expectations in the first half of the year and then regressed, if that's the right word, and an offense that way underperformed the first half of the year and then did what it was supposed to do the rest of the year. So, when the book's closed here, you know, hopefully 6 weeks from now, there'll be plenty of time to talk about, you know, who comes and who goes, because there has been so little turnover with the Steelers staff the past couple of years.
I think if Ben decides to come back, I think he closes out his career with Randy Fee. The only way I move on from Todd Haley at this point of Ben's career, assuming Ben does return, is if it's Randy Fietner, because I don't think you want to upset the apple cart too terribly much by going outside. If Ben wants to work with Randy for the rest of his career, that's the way I go. Now, if you're going to go, if Ben doesn't come back, then maybe you just make, you know, you bring in a totally, you know, different offensive coordinator from the outside at that point. But I will not be shocked, regardless of how the Steelers season ends, and I've said this, you know, probably in the last couple times in the last 8 weeks or so, I would not be surprised if Todd Haley does not have his contract renewed. And if Ben comes back, which I think most of us still think that's going to happen, that Randy Fietner would be the offensive coordinator. That's the only way I can envision it happening with Ben coming back there. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. Danny Smith, yeah, we'll see what happens there. Boy, how good was it to see? I thought I was having a dream, see a 90-something yard kickoff return for a touchdown. The defense ended up with a 5.2 adjusted net yards per passing attempt number. And, you know, as we've said, it didn't go the right direction there during the set. It was a complete opposite of how it went last year. Not a good first half for the Steelers defense, but a good second half passing defense for the Steelers outside of obviously the AFC Championship game against New England. We'll see. When you look at the best defenses in the playoffs right now, pass defenses, it goes Jacksonville Jaguars, 3.7. It goes Minnesota, 4.6. Philadelphia, 5.1. The Rams, 5.1. And then the Steelers, 5.2. The Bills, 5.3. Saints, 5.3. Titans 5.9, Falcons 5.9, Kansas City 6.1, Carolina 6.2, Patriots 6.3. Going by history, there is no way the Patriots, Panthers, Chiefs, and that's it. No way those teams can win the Super Bowl this year.
All right, last thing, we'll wrap it up with draft order set for the first 20 teams. AFC North, Browns picking 1 and 4. So is it Saquon Barkley and one of the two quarterbacks or one of the three quarterbacks? You could see, you know, obviously, you know, another infusion of talent there. The Bengals will pick at 12, and the Ravens will pick at 16, right in the middle at 9 and 7. You know, we saw five 9 and 7 teams didn't make the playoffs this year. 10 and 6. If you won 10 games in the NFL in both conferences, you made the playoffs. No 10 team wins didn't make the playoffs. Some nine win teams got in. You know, obviously in the AFC, the Tennessee had 10, right? Buffalo gets in with 9 wins. The Ravens, the Chargers, the Seahawks, the Cowboys, and the Lions, all 9 and 7, don't get in the playoffs.
What do the Ravens draft first round? This is easy.
Well, I mean, a wide receiver, quarterback. I mean,
wide receiver. Got to be a wide receiver, in my opinion. What do the Bengals need?
They did not dress Breshad Perriman yesterday as a healthy scratch. The Bengals are going to be interesting to decide what they do with Andy Dalton. They go offensive line is got to be, you know, their top priority.
I concur. Offensive line for where they pick sounds about right. You know, a stud left tackle if they could get one there. Where did you already hit on the Browns? That could go, you know, 18, 18 different.
It's going to go quarterback, and then the question is if Saquon Barkley's there at four, do they take him?
I mean, he's a talented kid.
He's on top of McShay's list. Of all, he's number one ranked guy. I guess he hasn't updated him recently, but I guess he was number two in his December ranking. I know a bunch of guys. Look, I think he's a Todd Gurley type back. So, opportunity to take him. He can do a lot of things well for you. He can catch the ball in the backfield. We'll see. He announced yesterday, so he's in.
All right. Anything else we got to get to? We beat this.
No. So we got to decide what we're going to do Wednesday. We'll do. We'll figure something out. We'll maybe have a guest for you on Wednesday. But Happy New Year. We gave you 90 minutes. It's time to go watch some football.
Damn sure is. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to donate to a show in Stitcher's top 100 sports podcast, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button up right navigational bar. Look, I have fun with listeners all the time. I have fun with followers and blog readers and all like that. We certainly do appreciate the support that you give us as well too. David, that's all I got until Wednesday. We'll have to figure. Well, Mike Tomlin talks on Tuesday. We'll have something to talk about.
Happy New Year, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.